Oh my God, this is such exciting news. We're coming out with the start of a Sell or Die network, and it's a podcast network, like-minded people, business-oriented people, creative, compelling podcasts that are going to help you learn more and earn more.
And so if you have a podcast, or you're thinking about a podcast, or you want a podcast, we can help you. The podcast network will broadcast your podcast and others all over the world. All you have to do is email sell or die at gitomer.com, and we will get back to you in a heartbeat. Keep in mind, you guys, diehards, he was a tough guy in Connecticut.
That makes him even tougher.
No, not like a Philly tough guy.
Hey, knock it off. Where do we start this? An answer doesn't matter. We're having a good time. Right.
He couldn't wait to get in here.
You need sales balls to make sales calls.
I'm tweeting that puppy.
Okay. Hi, everybody, and welcome to Sell or Die. My name is Jeffrey Gitomer. I'm the author of The Little Red Book of Selling, and I am joined today by the fabulous
Jen Gluckow, founder and CEO of Sales in a New York Minute. What's up, everyone?
But I'm joined every day by Jen Gluckow, and that is just one of the joys of my life. There you go.
I feel the same way.
Okay.
But enough for the corny.
Yeah, so much about you. Let's hear more about you.
No, I don't know that our audience really cares how we feel about each other.
That's true. So, what's happening?
All right. So, coming up today, we have an amazing, amazing episode, potentially one of my favorite episodes, actually. It's with Matt Monero, and he's going to talk about growing a business to $100 million per year. Now, not many people can say they've grown a business to $100 million per year
and then ditched it
and then torch it. Literally, he said, I don't like how this is going. I'm going to torch this business and rebuild it from the ground up.
Which he did.
And yeah.
But just realize one thing. We're going to talk to this guy today, and something, he has a phone booth in his office, and the phone booth is his casket. He wants to be buried in the phone booth because he is the cold calling king of all time. And
I love it.
Wonderful. Yeah.
I love it. I love it. That's when you know you're really passionate about what you do. That's what he wants to be buried in, you know? But anyway, he has a really interesting story to tell. And also, he's going to give real world advice that you can use right now to make more money.
About the cold call and how it's evolving.
Yeah. And just about how he's built a business to $100 million. And whether you're trying to build a huge business like that or you're just trying to make your quota, his strategies are applicable for anyone. And he even has a book that's out right now called You Need More Money. He has and you probably do. So go get his book. But before we get into the interview, let's talk about what's going on right now, Jeffrey.
Okay.
We're in Paris.
Right. And it could be way worse.
Oh, yeah.
It's sunny and 80, so it's a little hot, but, you know, it's, you walk outside.
I'll take 80 over 90.
Yeah.
90, 95 degree days in a country that doesn't believe in air conditioning.
So we've been here for a couple of weeks. We're leaving in a few days. And
I don't want to leave.
Yeah, I know, me neither. But we're coming back at the end of the month, so it's not going to be that bad. But here's the deal. Yesterday, we went to see art and gardens and flowers.
Yeah, we went to Giverny, the place that Claude Monet built. It was his home and his
garden. He built the garden and he built the pond. He bought the house. Claude Monet was dead broke when he first started. No one would buy his paintings. He struggled. He got thrown out of Paris because the Prussians were, you know, beating up the French, and had to go to London. Still didn't sell too much in London.
No, they didn't really like his work in London.
Right. And this is the guy who's arguably one of the greatest Impressionist paintings of all time. I mean, you can talk about the Toulouse-Lautrecs and the and the Degas, Renoir, but Monet's right up there with anybody.
Oh, yeah.
And he finally comes back to Paris, gets a couple, makes his connections with the art dealer, and struggles, but sells.
But talk about resilience.
Yeah.
He's exiled out of his country because he can't make a dime here. He's struggling here. He goes to London and also struggles there and then comes back and says, my work rocks. I'm going to keep going at it.
And we were enthralled by. How did this guy go from I'm a failure to I'm one of the greatest artists of all time?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you're going to name 10 artists, he has to be one of them. Anyway, it was very inspirational to learn the story behind the art, mm-hmm. and the struggle behind the art and the sacrifice behind the art and the persistence behind the art that got this guy to worldwide acclaim that you can't buy his paintings now for thousands. It takes millions.
Mm-hmm. Right. And the question for you is, how easily do you give up or yeah. not? How much are you willing to put in your resilience and to really hold up your persistence? Imagine whatever struggle you're going through right now, and then imagine you're exiled out of your country. Are you going to keep going?
Now, his attitude was not the greatest,
mm-hmm.
but his determination outweighed his attitude,
mm-hmm.
and his resilience to bounce back and do it again, bounce back and do it again, was off the chart.
And one could argue that if he had a better attitude, he may have been able to see more of his success while he was alive rather than after his death. Okay, so I just had an idea. We have like 500 photos between the three of us who went yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to take maybe 5 to 10 of our best ones, and I'll post them up in the Facebook group, the Sell or Die official Facebook group. So if you're a member of that group, you'll be able to check out some, you know, behind the scenes from our trip. Maybe there'll be a selfie of me and Jeffrey in there. You never know.
And maybe of our guide and of Laurent Beretta, who
our
took
friend.
Us. Yeah.
Yeah. But definitely join that group and become a member, because we're going to be active in it and participating with you to answer your questions.
So it's Matt Monero time.
All right, let's do it.
Ladies and gentlemen, the great Matt Monero. Our guest today is Matt Monero. Matt is the founder of Commercial Fleet Financing. He took from a single client in 1995 to earning $100 million annually. He's the author of The Grit and host of his own podcast. He has a new book out now, You Need More Money. Wake up and solve your financial problems once and for all. Please help me welcome the great Matt Monero.
Matt, that's we awesome. Are so glad you're here.
No, he's the only guy. If you, some of you are listening to this, so you can't see the phone booth in the back of Matt's studio. It's going to be his coffin. Now, anybody that pre-plans their death is somebody that we really need to talk to seriously.
Wait a minute, like you?
Oh.
Jeffrey has his music picked out.
I got my music picked out. I do.
Oh,
I honestly
yeah?
do. Of course. Why don't you have yours?
Well, I'm not sure that I'm going to.
You open
do
up
one
the phone booth. You open up the phone booth, and it starts to play. All my exes live in Texas.
Oh man!
Oh, that's great. I love every time the door opens, the music plays.
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny. All right, so Matt, talk to us about starting your company in 1995. What was your original idea and intention?
There wasn't one. I mean, I was the number one sales guy at the company. I did it like everybody does, right? I was the number one sales guy and said, I hate my boss and I'm going to leave and do this better than he did. And that mm-hmm. was a really bad trade. Probably cost me a decade of my success making that trade. But I did it and I was left for dead here in Dallas, Texas. I was actually transferred to Dallas with the company to open up our first office. And in hindsight, this guy was much smarter than I was, because I think he shoved me out. He got me out of headquarters and said, I can't work with this guy anymore. Let's tease him and say, go open up our first office and he'll get out of our hair. And I bit hook, line, and sinker and moved to Dallas, Texas, and was in this one little one-bedroom apartment thinking, well, here we go. We're going to do all the game plan and everything. And before I knew it, the budget changed, the goals changed. He stopped returning my phone calls. And I was pretty much left for dead here in Dallas.
Wow.
And I said, well, then I guess I'll just leave and start my own finance company. And he didn't like that idea. He sued me immediately for breach of my non-compete clause. So, you know, literally not two nickels together. I didn't know anyone in Dallas, Texas, not a friend of a friend. And I was fighting a lawsuit too, trying to get a business off the ground. So it was very, very difficult.
Did they prevail in the lawsuit?
It's funny. I never really talk about the details of it. Not that I'm afraid of it, but it's embarrassing. I mean, I couldn't afford a lawyer. I represented myself pro se.
Mm-hmm.
And I think everyone just threw their hands up and were like, just forget it. Just let this guy go do whatever he's got to do. And they were smart, though, because they bought themselves probably 9 months of me not being able to talk to the customers. And I was and still am a hustler. I would have landed a lot of that business, but mm-hmm. the lawsuit prevented me. And that was smart on his part. But that's the summation of why I'm in Dallas, Texas, doing what I'm doing. I there was no game plan.
I want one more question. Is your company now bigger than theirs?
Oh yeah, we're so much.
Come on, come on.
It's funny that
that's all you need, isn't it?
It just took a long time, my friend.
That's all right. Listen, it's worth it. In the end, you have a piece of cheesecake someplace, and you're going, the hell with those bastards.
Yeah. That's a lesson for people to learn, though. I mean, I was really glad that in hindsight that it happened, because it really threw me in. It was baptism by a business by fire, right? I mean, I was fighting for survival right away.
So you're starting your first business and someone sues you and you're glad that that happened. That's right. An amazing line. Yeah,
that's pretty cool. It sounds like a country and western song.
So how did you, okay, so now the lawsuit's over 9 months later, whatever. How do you go from this one client or even getting that one client to then building the business?
Yeah, I mean, it was purely cold calling, old school yellow pages, dial for dollars every day, day after day, week after week, month after month, year after year for a long, long time. I know everybody wants to do it differently today, but that's how I did it. I cold called my way to a client base.
And can you give us like a little bit of a 1 minute of your pitch?
Yeah. I like to, number one, have a lot of hooks in the water mm-hmm. from a sales standpoint. So mm-hmm. I'm not a sort of, shoot with a sniper rifle. I like to shoot with a buckshot, right? So I was constantly trying different things. But my pitch would be, Mr. Jones, I've identified you as the perfect client. You have the credit. You have the fleet size. You have the time in business, which means I have the lowest rates in the marketplace. I'd like to talk to you about your next purchase. When are you buying? That's how it would go. Send me an email. Mr. Jones, I don't send emails. I need to come out and see you. Well, send me something in the mail. Mr. Jones, I really don't like sending stuff in the mail. I need to come and see you. And I would book the appointment. I drive around the city of Dallas with my kids today, and we'll go wherever for their games. And sometimes we're going through the hood. And I'll say, man, I've been over there. I know exactly where I'm. They say, Dad, how do you know all this? I'm like, because I sold in every part of Dallas, Texas for the first decade. Wow. I drove every one of these bad.
So what you're saying is you would go from Dickie's Barbecue to Dickie's Barbecue.
I do have landmarks of food. It is true. I know a lot of food joints. It's true.
That's cool. Do you have a favorite barbecue, Dallas Barbecue?
In my town, there's a place called the Feed Store, which, you know, originally was like where they sold grain and stuff, and the guy turned it into a barbecue place. It's incredible.
It's so amazing. Dallas, Texas barbecue, there's nothing like it. You can tell me the barbecue's better than that, but there's nothing like Dallas barbecue. Nothing. It is the best.
Something happened about Dallas that's important, I think, to reference. Dallas and Texas as a whole wants you to win in business. And so I always felt very optimistic that it was like the pioneer land for me growing up in Connecticut and coming to Texas. It was Mars, but I never felt pushback. The city wants you to win. The people down here want you to win. The government wants you to win. I just felt that Texas was a place that I could get ahead, and it worked out for me. And I don't know that exists in every other city in the country.
I will tell you personally, Charlotte or Dallas were my two choices.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. That's interesting.
Yeah.
But how much of that was you wanting yourself to win?
I mean, it was a pretty lonely road. There's no question about it. It wasn't like people immediately took me under their wing here and said, let me introduce you to Bubba and you know, Billy Bob and all that stuff. I mean, it was.
And how's your mama and them?
I wasn't fixing to do a lot of stuff other than cold call. But
bingo.
But even so, it didn't get in the way, right? Growing up in Connecticut and not being from here, people are they want you to win in business down here. And there are a lot of amazing transplants. You look at a guy like Mark Cuban, or you look at a guy like Phil Romano, who started all the restaurants, or you look at a guy like Ross Perot, or a number of guys that nobody knows about who moved to Texas and really did well for themselves.
Mm-hmm. It's a very accepting place. That's true. Entrepreneurially, it's wonderful. When I do a public event, I'm going to be doing a public event in Dallas probably in 4 or 5 months.
Okay.
So maybe we'll do a Q&A, me and you.
I'd love it. Would you come and sign my booth too?
Sure.
That would be great.
What I'd like to do is I'll sign the back of it and says, please use other door.
This is Christy Walters.
And I'm Jeff Bajorek. Together, we host the Why and the Buy podcast, and we are pumped to be a part of the Sell or Die podcast network.
The Why and the Buy is a show about tackling sales and leadership challenges that salespeople and small business owners face every single day.
While we have a lot of fun doing it. I'm a dad. I'd like to think I'm not a terrible dad, but I'm a dad, and I make bad jokes.
I love it. That's what happens when you start a podcast.
If you like making a lot of money and being super successful, then sure, I suppose.
Jeff and I have been there. We've lived through it, and we're here to share the lessons we've learned. So subscribe, rate, and review us on Apple Podcasts, Overcast, Stitcher, or wherever you get podcasts. And remember, when you know your why.
Your hows and your whats get much better. We'll talk to you again real soon.
And mic drop.
So just a couple more things about your business rise, which I think is important to our diehard listeners. When you got a no... When somebody, you're making a lot of cold calls, when you got to know, how did you bounce back?
Yeah, I'm an action guy. So I'm a volume guy. Probably from a sales standpoint, I'm not the highest margin guy, right? Like I'm the guy who says, I'll make it up in volume. Mm-hmm. And so I did it in the cold calling world too. Here's what I'm talking about. And still today in my office, if you're new to me, to my company, you're going to make 75 cold calls a day and you're going to be on the phone for a minimum of 3 hours. And we're going to track that. And if you miss for a day or two, we're going to call you in and say, hey, what's going on? Is there something in your life? Is there a problem? Because the expectation was clear. It's 75 calls a day and 3 hours worth of talk time. I know that's very counterintuitive to a lot of companies today, but we still do it that way. But what do you guys think? Is cold calling dead or does cold calling still work?
I think it still works, but I think it needs a combination of the other tools that are out there, like email, visiting in person, like you said. Social. It's not just cold calling anymore.
Mm-hmm. And with the tools that are available on social, I'm going to make a targeted call rather than a cold call.
Yeah.
If I want to talk to Matt Monero on the phone because of his company and he's a target of mine, I'm going to LinkedIn the guy. I'm going to LinkedIn his company. I'm going to Google him, Google his company. If he's not the CEO, I'm going to CEO the company. And then I'll make the call so I have something intelligent to talk about.
Yeah, that's a huge advantage. I was making cold calls out of the Yellow Pages to ABC Towing Company.
Right, when they still had Yellow Pages.
When they had Yellow Pages.
Right.
Yeah.
People don't remember.
Where's your Yellow Pages today?
Some people have never seen them, by the way.
Yeah, I know. But what I would do, this old school tactic, I know it's nothing new for you, but if I traveled, if I went to Oklahoma City or I went to Austin and
I took the Yellow Pages with you.
I took the Yellow Pages back with me. I was a new source of
lead. I love that.
Every Motel 6, I was stealing the Yellow Pages as my lead source.
Yep. They had them in the drawer in the nightstand.
You bet.
It's unbelievable.
Before cell phones. I mean, this is you know, early 90s type stuff. There was you weren't making phone calls on cell phones and stuff like that. These are landline. These are phone booth stuff.
That's when cell phones were still kept in plastic bags, right?
Well, when I was selling my consulting services to companies in various cities around the country in 1975 and 1976, I would go to with the twins and park the Buick in the motel lot, go into the hotel room, take the Yellow Pages, look for the 5 screen printing companies that had the biggest ads, and that's who I called.
Oh, my gosh.
That's cool. That's cool.
And, I mean, it was easy. And I had a phone in the car that you literally screwed into the – you know, it was like a regular phone with a dial tone. And there was like 2 or 3 operators in the city, and it was a buck a call.
Oh, yeah. I remember when they were super expensive.
Yeah, real expensive.
Oh, yeah.
So there are people out there.
Listen, if you're resourceful, Matt is obviously resourceful. And if you're a diehard and you're listening right now and you are not a resourceful person to take advantage of the tools that are available to you at this moment in time, you're not going to win. Plain and simple. And Matt won because he took the resources that were available at that time, whether it's Yellow Pages or whatever, and he ran the hell out of it.
Yeah. And there are people out there. I'm going to flip the question back to you now, Matt, because there are people out there who say that cold calling is dead. So what would you tell those people?
I would agree with what Jeffrey said. It is a smarter way of doing it because of the technology and the information that we can get that makes us more strategic on the phone call. But there's another side of it too, which is, are the new breed of salespeople developing the hustle that is required? There's a tremendous amount of mental focus that is required to sit down and make 100 or 150 phone calls out of the Yellow Pages. Mm-hmm. And there's a huge difference in skill when you don't know who is about to answer that phone call. It could be the owner's wife. It could be the owner's brother who they're in a fight against each other. He doesn't want to let, I mean, you don't know what, you could be the lawyer. You have no idea what's about to happen. Yeah. So I think there's a magic to that skill set that probably isn't being developed like it once was required.
Yeah, banging your head up against the wall is a very necessary skill. Getting rejected 100 times is a very necessary skill, but it builds your resilience. It also builds your creativity to a point where you're going to not use that line again because it failed 50 times. You're going to try something a little different.
Yeah, builds your filter, right? Mm-hmm. You're just not going to do the same thing over and over. But for me, every call was to convert to an appointment because I knew my strength was let me get in front of you, and then we're going to probably like each other for a little bit. At least we're going to be able to get some small talk going and have some fun for a little bit, and then we can maybe convert that into business. I was never looking for a one call close.
I want you diehards to go back and listen to Matt's initial presentation about you're the perfect client for us and I have the lowest rates and we just need to sit down and talk about it because I'd like to, you know, when's your next purchase going to be? Can you send me something? No. Can you send me an email? No. And then you end up getting the appointment. Now, that's what happened when it went well. But I can tell you that if he's calling 100 people a day, 20 people are going to just hang up on him. Plain and simple.
Sure. For a long time.
Yeah.
For a long time. But I believe that's the game of sales. Look, maybe filters and targeted marketing and stuff like that can get, you know, fantastic ratios. But heck, even when we send out an email campaign right now, we're lucky if we get a double digit open on it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, how is that a great strategy? I don't know. I mean, you get 11% open rate. There's 11% chance. I don't know. It still seems pretty low to me. I think I'd rather just jump on a phone call and handle it.
I think you're absolutely correct. But
I love that.
There's a lot of call reluctance in today's marketplace.
Why do you think people are scared to pick up the phone?
I think in all honesty, they see these other methods that are appearing to work for them.
No, they're easier.
Is that what are the other methods appear easier?
I don't have to talk to anybody.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know any other way. I can tell you this, it's becoming a lot more difficult to hire people who have experience banging the phones. And so we have to spend more time training people, which is, you know, adds a whole new element of the hiring process. Are we going to keep this guy or gal? Is this person going to work out? Do they want to do the work that I know how to do it? But we're not a Facebook ad company. I'm not an email drip campaign. Yes, we do Infusionsoft and stuff like that. But I'm a cold call guy. I want to talk to the customer. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And even in our operations department, when there's a problem and they start to send an email, I just pull them aside and say, would you do me a favor? Just pick that guy. Just pick up the phone.
Exactly.
and just give me the phone and I'll just walk you through it. I promise it won't take 30 seconds and you're like four emails into this problem. Right?
Exactly. Oh, God. Do you script the calls for your people?
We rebuttal. We work on what we call an explanation of service and then we work on rebuttals. But at some point, we believe the person has to sound very natural.
Yep.
And so we give them a good, you know, lead. Here's what I think you should say. And then we really train them up on the five or six things that we know they're going to hear. So they
get
very comfortable.
We do it or you do it?
Well, we have what we call CFF University. So it's our online training program. Mm-hmm. It's proprietary to us. So we don't sell it or anything. It's just our own thing. And we've got dozens of rebuttals and everything can be seen on video. It's me doing the videos, by the way, but I'm not doing the training anymore.
Very cool.
Could I throw my hat into your ring?
Sure.
If you would send me a couple, just email me a couple of the scripts that you use. Mm-hmm. If I think I can be of help to you, I'll tell you. And if I don't think I can be of help to you, I'll tell you that too. Is that fair enough?
Yeah, it's very fair, but I know which direction that one's going to go.
No, I honestly and truly, because you are a professional cold caller. You have made thousands and thousands of cold calls. Fair to say?
Tens and tens of thousands.
Okay,
of cold.
So you're like the maven of cold calling. In fact, your middle name is Matt Cold Monero.
No, Matt Cold Call Machine Monero.
There
cold
you guy. Go. Oh.
Okay, but I have had a lot of experience on the telephone early in my sales career, and I was a tweaker. And I would tweak a word, tweak another word, tweak another word until I could get really solid response. And sometimes when it's all your thing, you don't always see the word.
Yeah, I agree completely. Yeah.
Do you have your reps listen to themselves?
We do. And
that's pretty funny, isn't it?
Yeah. They thought they sounded better.
Yeah, of course.
Right. God, I sound like shit. Right, bud.
I think what's funny though is I'm not here to say that my way is the way.
It's no, just, but your way works.
It worked for me. And it had to work for me. By the way, I think it's a little bit more difficult. Even now, we see the distractions within the customers. In the old days, I could have called someone at 10:30 in the morning, and they probably were at their desk.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They probably would have picked up. Today, I don't know where they are. They right. could be working remotely. They could be anywhere.
They could be on a beach on vacation.
And so what does that do to the sales process? I think it extends it. It means maybe you need to start working at 7 in the morning to get through the receptionist, or they're probably there and the hustlers are there in the morning, or you got to call later. You got to call 5, 6, 7 o'clock at night, mm-hmm. which means you might be working a 12-hour day instead of an 8-hour day.
The other day on the phone, we were talking about what happens after you send a proposal and you can't get the person back on the phone.
Mm.
And I'll share this with you because it's perfect for you. You don't let your guys send a proposal to anybody without getting the prospect's cell phone.
Yeah.
And that way you can text them because mm-hmm. they can avoid an email. They can't afford it. They can't avoid a text about follow-up.
I'd like to go one step further on that, Jeffrey. Here's what we did. We built a little piece of software. Didn't take our programmer but a minute. We call it the budget builder. And we ask the customer the question, how much money does the truck bring in? Mm-hmm. We go through the primary 4 or 5 expenses, insurance, driver, repair and maintenance, fuel, et cetera. And then we hit compute and it spits out the profitability. And our guys go through that budget builder and we leverage that budget builder when the guy won't call us back. And we have screenshotted it and we send it to him and say, hey, listen, I don't want you to lose out on this $6,400
that
this purchase made. You know, the longer we wait, the less of this you're going to keep. And that's a tool that we're using to constantly ping them and remind them of, hey, we're wasting money here. Not just, hey, I need to follow up with you. I need to talk to you about my proposal. Nobody wants to return that phone call.
Yeah, that's really cool.
When I'm on the road driving, I drive 1,500 miles a year, so don't say when I'm on the road. But I will listen to the radio, Sirius Radio, and I hear all the time ads for truck drivers.
Yeah.
We pay an extra 10 cents a mile. We mm-hmm. have benefits. We. Are those potential customers of yours?
Well, we don't like to do startup truckers like that. We like to do, we call it the 5-5-7. 5 years in business, 5 units in the fleet, 700 credit score. That's our ideal customer.
Oh, wow.
And so that's startup trucker or, you know, learn to drive your truck. But the company that's hiring
that's
them.
That's what I meant. Yeah.
Yeah. The company that's hiring them is definitely a prospect. But I think it's a really big and interesting topic because it's a huge problem that exists in transportation. Where do you find drivers? Mm-hmm. And it is the sole reason why autonomous trucks are going to happen. Hmm. There is no question that a truck is going to drive Budweiser, which they already did, by the way, from Los Angeles to Phoenix. That is absolutely going to happen because the trucking companies are sick and tired of the problem.
Yeah.
Finding drivers.
Unfortunately, wow. When they get there, it's Budweiser.
It's still Budweiser. No right. matter who brought it.
So you seem to have all your metrics down, how many calls, how many the ideal client, everything to a T. Now, was it always this way?
Hell no. He was all screwed up.
No, I mean, all of it was learned and filtering. And as Jeffrey was mentioning, this tweaking, this constantly trying to get it better. And it might sound great. We make a gosh darn a lot of mistakes here every day. We hire the wrong people. We screw up. We don't follow up enough to close the deal. We didn't treat the customer well enough to get all their repeat business. I mean, it's selling. And we're also in the credit business, though, which adds a whole other element to it, right? The guy's got to pay us back.
Do you finance your own deals?
We fund our own deals, and then we sell the deal off to the bank. So we control a lot of the process, but the servicing and collecting is done by the bank who buys our loan.
Smart. That's where the 700 comes in. Yeah.
That's where, which is that matrix is actually the bank's. Mm-hmm. If I book originate that loan, the bank will buy it, and so that's why it makes sense for us to go find it because I can get out of it.
So you build this business, and then one day you decide you're going to torch it.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that part.
We need to hear about this. Come on. Like you build it to $100 million, and then decide I don't like how this is going. I need to start from scratch.
Yeah. I did. I said, I'm not going to do it anymore. But it wasn't the business's fault. It was my fault. I had become a tyrant in a lot of ways. You know, I mean,
you seem like a teddy bear.
Well, maybe now. This was maybe now. But no, I had a lot of stuff to prove. You know, I had a lot of people to prove wrong. I had family that I had to prove wrong. My real dad left when I was 6 months old, and I never saw him or heard from him again. It was just me and my mom. And then she remarried, and my adopted dad, who is my dad today, and I love him, was a very difficult guy. Tough guy. Called me stupid, idiot, retard almost every day of my life. He was not a let me take you under my wing and show you the ropes kind of guy. Mm-hmm. He was a tough guy. And that stuff creates a lot of fuel and energy and heat.
He's and a tough guy in Connecticut. Keep in mind, you guys, diehards, he was a tough guy in Connecticut.
That makes him even tougher.
No, not like a Philly tough guy.
Hey, knock it off.
So tell us what happened.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a straight up, I remember it. It was a very specific moment. And we'd reached the $100 million mark, which was always the goal for me. And I was a bad guy. I mean, like I would call somebody in and fire them, and I would say, you know, you dumb shit. This is the best opportunity that somebody like you is ever going to get. You blew it. And then I'd throw a box at them and say, now go get your shit and get out of here. And I didn't see anything wrong with that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, that's because of where you were raised.
Well, how did you?
Was that parental influence as well?
Yeah. It was a lot of things. It was actually, and I know this may not be believable, but there actually was care because I believed that. I said, man, I gave you the shot that I create. I had to find this shot. I gave you the shot. I served up a lot of things and you blew it, man. You screwed it up. I just was impossible to communicate with and work with.
How did you realize that though?
I started working with a coach and he began to help me see some of this stuff. By the way, I'm a pretty introspective guy. I mean, I knew that things. You know, by the way, I had a radio show at the time, which Jeffrey, I don't know if you remember, but you were a guest on that show years ago. And I destroyed the studio live on the radio. I freaked out at my soundboard guy, and I smashed all the flat screens and the lights, and then I threw the mic at the guy. One of the mics, not this one, but one like this, I threw it at him right at his head, and I missed him, and I came out, and everybody was looking at me like, you know, this guy's a monster, and I was, and I just said, I'm going to change, man. I'm gonna fix it, and I'm gonna fix everything. I'm not just gonna do a little bit. I'm gonna lose weight. I'm gonna stop chewing and smoking cigars. I'm gonna be better at home. I'm gonna be a better father. I said to myself, I'm gonna be a world class leader. That's what I'm gonna turn into. And we called it the torch. And I said, I don't care if the company goes to zero. We're gonna rebuild this company on mission statement and core values. And I'm gonna be a freakazoid towards it. And nobody's gonna hear me like that. No one's gonna be disrespected anymore. I promise you guys, I'm not gonna be that guy anymore. And I can only remember one time since then where I think I was, and it was nothing like it used to be. But that's the reality. Wow. And I had a bunch of guys leave. 7 guys left right away. We were down $30 million in about the first 2 weeks. They started competing
companies.
And started plucking off our, because they were like, Monero's a lunatic anyway. He's totally lost it now. Let's go start stealing customers. And tell him, and I said, go. I'm not going to sue anybody. Go. To all of you, go if you want. And of course, that's not how it went. I have some amazing people here who stayed. And we fixed the place. And today, by the way, we did 113 million that year. And I bet this year, maybe a little bit too early to predict, but I think we'll do about 180 million. And so the torch worked.
Yeah.
The torch worked.
Go.
Well, actually, though, you are the torch. And what you did is just turned yourself off and put different fuel in it to be able to make it happen.
Yeah, I did. That fuel burned out. I was done with that fuel. Mm-hmm. There wasn't anything left. And that's what started making me crazy was I didn't have anything to burn. I was done with it. I hit the 100 million. I was purged with my old man. I was good with him. I didn't have the pain really fighting me every day. I was like, where's the new pain? Where's the new fuel?
Mm-hmm.
And it made me a little crazy. But the new fuel now is being relentless to the company culture. It's building a world-class company. It's giving people this opportunity that is deserved of people who are willing to work hard and for me to reach my potential as a world-class leader. That's it. Wow. That's what I'm after.
What's that book by you?
This is the new book. You Need
Hold
More Money.
Hold up book.
It's a great book. It's the story. The genesis of the book is my brother-in-law. Look, through this torch, we had personal tragedy in which my wife's only brother died. He was diagnosed with cancer at 46, and he left a wife and four kids with no health insurance, no life insurance, and $100 in the bank. And right through the torch, we were going through this as well. So not only was there madness at my office, but there was tremendous difficulty at home.
Wow.
My wife and I have been together 22 years, and I'd like to think we're crazy about each other, but I know she loved her brother more than she loves me. I know it. And he died, and he died with nothing. And so I wrote a little story about it, and that ended up getting published by Penguin, and the book came out 3 weeks ago. So,
who's your publisher?
Penguin is the publisher.
I know. Who's your guy?
Kashik.
Got it.
Kashik is my editor up there. Is that what you mean by the editor?
Yeah.
My agent is Dupree Miller.
Gotcha. Oh, wow. In L.A.
Yes. Yeah.
No, in Dallas. Out. They're in Dallas, right?
They're in Dallas, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Chan Miller. Yeah, it worked out great. And so that's the power. That's the story. The story is, you know, I believe we are ridiculously behind. It's an epidemic in America. I don't think people put any attention on their money. And if you don't, you have the unfortunate situation where you can end up like my brother-in-law, who we were all crazy about. We loved this guy, but he died suddenly, busted broke, and he left a wife and four kids to deal with the mess. So, you know, you for $50 a month, you can get a $200,000 term life insurance policy. That would have changed everything.
Mm-hmm.
And so the book is broken up into two segments. The first is the wake-up call, which I really, you know, sort of hopefully wake the reader up to the fact that they're behind. And then the second is my version of the roadmap. How the heck did I do it? And I literally walk people through the steps of do this, do this, do this, do this. And you'll have a chance to not be behind.
What are some of the biggest things that are diehards? No, we haven't. Our autograph copies are lost in the mail.
Yeah,
they're coming. They're coming.
All right, cool.
Hey, Billy, get with Ramesh on that too, okay? We're done the thing.
Yeah.
We want them signed. So what are some of the things our diehards can do right now let's say they're already awakened by what you just said? What are some of the things they can do right now to change their financial outcomes?
Well, I don't want to reuse other people's data, but the fact of the matter is there's some really good data out there and there's some really bad data out there. The first thing everybody's got to do is get a handle on where is your money going. Mm-hmm. I mean, you literally have to write down where the money is going. The second component is, and this is a controversial part of the book, maybe, but you have to go in and if you work for someone, you have to go in and get a raise. And if you don't work for someone, you have to go in and get a raise.
Which means raise your own salary.
It means you, because here's the litmus test that happens. When you go into your boss and say, I need a raise, your boss is either going to, one, give you a raise, or they're going to not give you a raise. That's what you need. You need the truth. If you work for yourself, you're going to go in to your accountant or your bookkeeper or to your own QuickBooks, and you're going to say, I need a raise. And you're going to say, I got no money. I can't give myself a raise. Well, that's what you need to know. Why can't you do it?
Mm-hmm.
And the odds are because you literally are not solving big enough problems and you're not bringing enough value to the marketplace. And then you have to go into the other step, which is, to me, the most important step, is the creation of this reserve account. And the reserve account is a separate account. Most people would call it a savings account. I do not, because it's not a savings account. A savings account is where you put your money at Chase for your checking account, and then you have a Chase checking account or savings account. That is not how it has to work. It has to be done at a different bank. Like, my reserve account is at a 2-branch Texas bank that is closed on Saturdays and open from only 9 to 5. It's a bitch for me to get my money out. And that's exactly what the reserve account has to be. You have to funnel as much money as you possibly can into that reserve account until you get to what I have 3 phases of wealth: broke, accumulation, and rich. Broke is until you have 50,000 liquid cash. Accumulation is the difference until you get to rich. And rich is truly defined where you are leading your lifestyle by design. And I don't care what that is. That doesn't have to be money. If you want to drive a truck like our clients and then go surf in Costa Rica 6 months and 6 months, I'm down with that. That's rich. But most people think they're rich and they are just hopelessly broke financially.
Mm-hmm.
And the book exposes it. It's tough. It's a tough wake-up call. The first 2 chapters are tough, man. And people have come back to me and said, wow, that was harsh.
How did the book promote?
What do you mean promote, Jeffrey?
Is it out now?
Yeah, yeah, it came out. It shipped 3 weeks ago. Yeah.
So they put it in bookstores. Is it in any airports?
I don't know about airports, but it's in 2/3 of the Barnes and Nobles across the country, which is pretty good. And I'm told that it's selling very well there. Amazon placed a 5,000 book pre-order, which the publisher tells me is decent. They felt that was pretty good. We're approaching somewhere around 8,000 books sold between pre-orders and launch date, and we're 3 weeks in. This is week four.
They tell me they're happy about it.
Congratulations on that, because it's not an easy thing to do.
Thank you. But my mother can only buy so many books, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
7,999.
So we need to keep the momentum going, because I think the book can help a lot of people. And as you know, and a lot of people on social give me a hard time. Well, you know, this guy's just selling books to make money. You know, it's a pretty bad trade.
Well, you know what? Selling books to make money is not a sin.
Right.
But if the book has good content
and can help people,
you earn the money.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, some books sell millions of copies and they don't do shit.
Mm-hmm. I think this book can help a lot of people. I really do. I wouldn't have taken the time away from my business to do it.
It sounds like it can. I'm excited to read it.
We will definitely read it, and we will send you a book report. Do you need a sales kick in the ass in the morning, but you don't have time to sit through a long presentation because you've only got a minute or two? Of course you don't. You need to feel inspired instantly. You need a sales idea that will take you to the bank. You need sales in a New York minute on YouTube. The great Jen Gluckow has sales in a New York minute video series. If I were you, I'd start my day with it before you do anything else. Sales in a New York minute, then coffee. Get your mind right before you fight the daily rush. All you have to do is go to YouTube and search for sales in a New York minute, or click on the link in the show notes.
I want to go back to something you said earlier about being part of your company's mission, which is and the things that you're focused on relentlessly. And one of those was becoming a world-class leader. Can you go into more detail? What does that look like to you?
Yeah, I mean, for me, a world-class leader is to be able to do two things: recognize a person's weaknesses and not beat them up for them. In fact, be acceptant of those weaknesses, because they made it through your cut, right? You hired their ass. So you hired those weaknesses. It's your fault. It's not their fault that they're weak at it. You're the one who let them through the filter.
Yep.
Yep.
So once they're in, you have to work with them. And the second piece is, I think the most important thing is, what is the superpower that you hired them for? And you have to give them the opportunity to explore that. And so I'm not looking for people to do a job in here. I want you to do the job that you're supposed to do. I'll give you a perfect example. We have a girl in our operations department who came to us and said, I want a promotion. I want to get out of the job I'm in and go to the next job. Well, here's the problem. She supports my two best salespeople in the office. My two best salespeople are not going to be happy that they're number one operation person, their dedicated operations person, no longer wants to support them. Isn't that reasonable to say?
Mm-hmm. I would say it's more than reasonable, but go ahead.
So I had one-on-one meetings with both of those guys last week. I said, we got a challenge here, fellas. I said, your team lead wants career development. And I want to know how you feel about it. Both of them said, of course she gets career development.
Yeah,
and cool. I said, I'm glad you said that, guys.
Because she was getting it anyway.
She was getting it anyway. Right? Now we're all on the same team. But my point is, what is leadership? Leadership is the conversation that opens up the dialogue, and hopefully the answer is to the betterment of everybody. So mm-hmm. so our mission, we're clear on it, the mission statement that we created, it took us 4 months to create that during the torch, by the way. It wasn't like I had the mission and said, here's what it is. We worked on it together. Is CFF exists to help ourselves and our clients reach our full potential through expertise, expectations, and gratitude. That's the mission statement of my company, After the Torch.
That's a good one.
Cool. I like that.
And so you're expected to be an expert. You're expected to understand your expectations. And when it all happens, we have to be grateful that we did it. And then we have four core values. They're very simple. My favorite one is number two, which we call personal happiness. I'm here because I want to be here. That's the whole core value. Mm-hmm. That's it, right? You ever wake up and hate going to that job? I don't want it to be this place, you know?
So what are the other three?
Yeah.
Well, core value number one, and although we don't have number one next to it, it is the number one core value, is company profits. So we can't, and the tagline to that is, our creative spirit can't be fully enjoyed without consistent profitability. I want to do cool stuff. Mm-hmm. I want to have a studio and a silly phone booth that I'm going to be buried in. And I want to do cool stuff.
You need a coffin. Yeah, everybody needs a coffin. Diehards, you have your coffin yet? What the hell are you waiting for?
How close is it to you? Is it within a foot or two of you?
Oh, man.
So number two is personal happiness. Number three is customer loyalty. And number four is preserving our reputation. Remember, we're in the credit business. We sell our loans to banks. Mm-hmm. We have to have a bullet's reputation. You cannot do anything in this regulated environment that conflicts your reputation. Because if we lose the banks wanting to buy our loans, we're toast.
Let's go back to Matt's brilliance for just 1 second. When he talked about hiring the right person or hiring the wrong person. He hired a person because he felt that they had a superpower. So diehards, why don't you take a minute right now and write down what you believe your superpower is? What do you believe that you are absolutely amazing at that other people will find it so attractive that they have to bring you in or buy your stuff or get hired for your perfect job? And I think if you can look at that and you just walk in to an interview and the person says, well, tell me a little bit about yourself. Well, the first thing you have to know is that my superpower is emotional engagement. Cool. No one's ever said that before in an interview, ever.
Yeah.
Guaranteed.
Yeah.
So if you know your superpower and you're ready to not just clarify it, but communicate it, then you're off to the races, dude.
Yeah, but everybody should take a personality test too. I mean, everyone takes a personality test in my office. By the time you get to my office for your interview, I already know who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And I know who you are, and I know who you think you should be because of the personality test. We rely heavily on. So if somebody doesn't know where to get their superpower, they're saying, well, how do I know who I am or what I'm great at? Take a personality test. Let some data tell you.
Yeah, there's tons of them. What do you use, a specific one that you want to share, or do you want to keep it a secret?
No, we use the predictive index. And predictive index says it's 87% accurate. We think it's 95% accurate. But another great one is the DISC test.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, just go take a DISC. The DISC is pretty uncanny accurate.
It is.
DISC is not my favorite, only because it only gives high and low out of four possibilities. I would rather have it 1, 2, 3, 4 or 4, 3, 2, 1.
Just, but I do like the disc because it gives the mean. It sort of gives you the graph of where sort of everyone else is, and then you can mm-hmm. see where you or the mm-hmm. other person might be in connection to that.
Yeah, so. And it also gives you some letters that you can use so that people
it's can It's cool when you do it as a team so yeah. you can see how you all interact yeah. with each other.
I'm a DISC. No, dude, that's the name of the test.
Oh, man.
I think that stuff is really important. But what you're talking about is superpowers. I mean, come on. We float through this thing called freaking life, man. I mean, we spend so much time working on stuff that we suck. The school system tells us what we suck at it, and we get graded and we get beat up for being shitty at calculus. Mm-hmm. I use a simple calculator. That's it. Addition, subtraction and multiplication, a little bit of division is all I use, right? But yet I got a D in calculus and everybody, my mother went crazy over it, right? It never mattered, Mom.
I was very fortunate. I just never took it. I didn't want to screw it up. I couldn't get through geometry. There was no way I was getting through calculus.
Let me ask you a question, guys. Is that easier for somebody today to sort of, get through the system without being good at that stuff? Or is it harder today?
I think it's important that you get good at something that you love. Mm-hmm. I hated math. And I always knew that if I could go buy a calculator, and by the way, when I was in math, calculators were brand new.
Yeah.
And
but now people have their calculators on them every second because they have a phone.
Yeah.
So you're looking at this class where the teacher's telling you need to know how to add or subtract or whatever it may be. And you're
seriously?
Like, what? Why?
I think it's harder in a lot of ways. I mean, you want to start up a hamburger joint, good luck, and coffee, good luck, and push a lawnmower and think you're going to, good luck. I mean, there's a lot of challenges to being great and figuring out how to carve up, an opportunity. It's not just so easily served up because there's competition everywhere, but it's all possible. You can still build a great landscaping company. I don't care how many people are in the space.
Yep. Exactly.
Or a coffee place.
Move to South Florida on the oceanside. The landscapers there make a bloody fortune.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Do you have any landscape in Dallas? Do you have people who have grass there and stuff?
Lots of it. You got to go. The movement in California is now the hardscape. You know, all my buddies out there are changing out.
They
all
the put grass rocks out in their front yard.
Rocks. Yeah. They're all putting rocks.
Yeah.
Or turf.
Oh, man.
So, listen, you're a pretty smart guy and you're a good guy. And if you're looking to learn some things, I think Matt Manero is your guy.
And if you're in Dallas looking for amazing sales training and a great job, it sounds like it would be great to work for Matt.
I don't think I can help the bastard.
I'm going to send you the rebuttal sheet, though. I'm sure you can.
Matt Manero's interview was great.
Oh, phenomenal. Because he had the gift and used it in a way that was beneficial to himself first and to others second.
Mm-hmm.
He also realized that he was in the New York City metropolitan area acting like a New Yorker and said to himself one day, this is not how I like it,
mm-hmm.
or this is not how I believe that it is the best for me and for my business.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm stopping it today.
That takes so much guts, so much self.
Oh, yeah.
You have to really look at yourself and determine, am I being the person I want to be every day?
Exactly. And, or who am I becoming?
Yeah.
So I have to give kudos to that. Hats off to that.
That's
so I would buy the guy's book.
Oh, yeah. He has two books. One of his books, the book that's most recently out, is called You Need More Money. And the other book is The Grit, The Only Thing You Need to Make Millions. And he talks about staying gritty, out hustling others, and just now he can tell people how to do it and be a nice person. You don't have to be an asshole in business to win.
No, but I know a lot of winners. They're assholes. So look at it from the perspective of what makes you happy, what makes you gratified, what makes you fulfilled, and measure that against the success that you have right now in order to determine, is this the right thing for me or not?
Mm-hmm.
And if you go to bed every night and you're all pissed off about something, then it is not. And Matt Manero finally woke up one morning and he goes, this is crazy. I'm changing.
Mm-hmm.
I think
he said he remembered the exact moment.
Oh yeah,
you know, that's like lightning strikes. Like it's so major. I just I'm impressed by him.
I think that he is a student of himself first.
Yeah,
and then the attitude and the entrepreneurship, and obviously the cold call.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's
a master.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
He also believes, though, now, and we talked about this, that there's a combination of picking up the phone and dialing,
mm-hmm.
or doing a little bit of pre-call research on LinkedIn, on Google, on whoever, that will allow the salesperson to be a bit more prepared than they were just picking up the yellow pages like he did in the beginning and dialing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, here's a guy who stole yellow pages as a lead source from a motel room.
But the customer's expectation of that has changed, too. 10 years ago, when you called them, they didn't expect you to know anything about them. Now they expect if you're going to pick up the phone and call them and intrude on their time, you better know about them.
We have a meeting on Monday of next week, and I told the company, I said, don't you dare ask me anything that you could have looked up on Google or found on my website.
Well, because they sent some pretty spammy kind of messages to get this meeting.
And we're not going to mention it unless it goes south. Then we'll tell you all about it.
No, we're not going to mention their name. We wouldn't want to do that.
So, you diehards out there, you can learn a lot from this Matt Monero thing. I think that there's an ability for you to get out and make the cold call. Make whatever calls you have to make in order to be able to make it. If you're not making it right now as a salesperson, then double your intensity. Double your effort. Don't give up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we talked in the beginning of the show about the artist that didn't give up. Let's talk about the salesperson that didn't give up. And that would be you, the diehard. Jen, I'm having a great time here. We're very inspired here, by the way.
Yeah, we are. We're totally
inspired.
You
see all this art. You see all this great food. You become inspired to do better.
Well, you don't just see the great food. You eat the great food.
Yeah, it's true. So we're eating and looking our way to success. We're, you know, taking trains and metros. But yeah. I think in the end, we're also sitting in our Airbnb.
Yep.
Inspired to write more and be better. And it's a vacation, but we're being productive
We've been writing 6 hours a day.
Yeah.
I mean, I've never been more productive. And part of the reason for that is the relaxed environment and the inspiration that's all around us.
I will confess to you, though, diehards.
Confess. Make it. Make a confession.
It takes 4 or 5 days.
Yeah.
To get into the groove wherever the hell you go.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you go someplace and immediately you start to drink. Then you're in the groove within the first half an hour. We're not like that.
No.
I will confess, I drink wine here every day. I'll have it with my meal. I'm mm-hmm. not like sitting with a bottle of wine writing. But I'll have a glass with my dinner. I don't think I had any with lunch yet.
Mm, no, not just, this trip.
No, just dinner. But here's the deal. If you are inspired by your surroundings, it will help you in whatever your creative juices are trying to put out. And our creative juices have been, literally, they have been exacerbated, intensified, and beaten to a point where we're throwing the words down on the pages and they're making sense and they're really good.
Oh, yeah. So Jeffrey and I just turned in. I'm going to confess something to you guys and tell you a little behind the scenes stuff. We just turned in, each of us, a book to our publisher that will ship on January 1st, but you can order it now on Amazon. And Jeffrey's book is called The Sales Manifesto, and you can look that up on Amazon. And mine is called Sales in a New York Minute. It's 212 pages of real world and easy to implement strategies. So,
I think it's time to get back to work.
I think so, too.
Do you want to? We don't drink Death Wish coffee here because they don't have any Keurigs.
I know, but we do drink Nespresso here, and
it's pretty good. But we'll get back to Death Wish, and we'll get back to Charlotte. The next show will be coming to you from Charlotte, but we're still going to do a couple more from Paris this summer. I am very appreciative of you, the listener, the diehard, the person who has been starting to write to us some really nice things about what they learn and how much they enjoy the show. we're killing it in numbers.
Yeah, keep those reviews coming, because those, we now have over 100 reviews on iTunes, and it is helping other people find our show. So we are really grateful for you, and we will continue to do this every week, soon daily. Until next time, I'm Jen Gluckow.
I am Jeffrey Gittimer. I am happy as hell right now to remind you, get out there and sell something, even if your ass falls off. Sell or diehards, attention. If you love the show, make sure you have subscribed to the show.
And if you've subscribed, make sure you rate us on iTunes and give us a star on Overcast.
And if you've done all of that, tell a friend, tell both your friends about the best sales podcast on the planet.
And if you've done all of that, well, you're a true seller diehard, and we thank you.
Thank you.
Merci beaucoup.